Right, good afternoon, everyone. I think we'll get going. My name is Sue Plater. I'm the manager of the Financial Support Office here at LSE. I think you've met my colleague, Kath Baldwin, at the welcome talk. She's going to do the final one of these talks, so we put both our names on this, but you've got me today, this afternoon. So what I'm going to run through, which is mainly of interest to UK and EU students and parents of UK and EU students, but I will touch on what's available for students from overseas, outside the EU. I'm going to talk about the fee level and what's available by way of government support, grants and loans from the government, what LSE offers by way of financial support to undergraduate students, the few additional funds we have available, and then a bit more about living in London, about accommodation, and about the support that's given to students. So starting with the tuition fee, last week BIS published information, very basic information on what loans and grants they're going to give, and established that the fee was going to remain at £9,000. They have already said that in the life of this Parliament they won't put the fee up. But, of course, by the time students start in October 2015, there will be another session of Parliament. But I doubt very much there'll be a change in fee levels in the 6 months. But, frankly, you never know at the moment. Change is coming so quickly from the government. So the option for paying the £9,000 per year is by taking a fee loan or by paying up front yourself, and when I say up front, there will be an instalment plan available each year. Or you can do a mix of those. If you want to pay some of the fees so that the student doesn't borrow everything, you can do that and just borrow the amount that you want to be committed to. For international students, the fee will be approximately £17,000 a year. And for them, again, there's an instalment plan for paying fees. So looking now at the student loan company and what's available. The tuition fee loan is available. It's government money which is administered by the student loan company, and you apply for it through GovUK, the website, and you apply, do one application for any borrowing or grant. So that's for the fee loan, for a maintenance loan, and for a grant. The process is an online form, and the student loan company, which is divided, the front of house of it, if you like, is divided between the different countries within the UK. So Student Finance England, for a start, have a process where when you apply, you are means tested, and the end result of that is you're assessed for the element of the loan that is means tested and for the grant. You can opt out of means testing, but if you are borderline on the possibility of getting a grant, it's certainly worth going through the means testing in case your circumstances change and you want to let them know that and it pushes up grant or bursary level. And I'll come to all the levels in a minute. So as I mentioned, you can apply for the full loan or any amount below it, and the actual tuition fee loan is paid to the university. It's paid in three instalments each year through the year, so it's not paid to the student for them to pay on to the university. And then the two loans, assuming that the student borrows for tuition fee and maintenance loan, are rolled together and the whole thing is treated as one loan. For EU students, it is possible to borrow for the fee loan, but not for maintenance, except in certain circumstances. Just briefly to say that, as somebody has drawn me this rather nice map, that Student Finance England is the main body that deals with most students, because most of the students coming to London tend to be from England. In Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, there are comparable organisations that are the front of house of student loan company. They have slightly different eligibility levels for grants and loans, but broadly speaking, it's a very, very similar system. In Wales, I think they still have the system which happened following devolution and with the increase of fees up to £9,000, that they don't make the student borrow the full amount. They actually give them a grant for part of the fees, and they just borrow for part of the fees. So if you're from Wales, you get a better deal on the fee loan, but I think the maintenance loan and grants are very similar. So the support from the UK government, the three elements are the loan for fees, the third one there, which I've mentioned, the loan for maintenance, and the grant. And just to say that for 2015, these arrangements are provisional, although we have had published the maximum level grant and the loan level. So we're able to look, based on 2014, at what we think the levels will be, but the full table has not yet been published. So EU students are not eligible for maintenance loans or grants, but having said that, they are if they meet certain residence requirements. So that's something that if you are from the EU but living in the UK, it's worth going through the assessment to see if you receive the means-tested support. So the maintenance grant, the government have announced that the maximum grant will remain the same as it was, is going to be in 2014, which is £3,387. The upper income threshold to receive any form of grant is £42,611. The grant is paid in three instalments to the student, and the grant is not repayable when you graduate. So those instalments come at the start of term once you've registered at the beginning of the first year. As well as the grant, everybody is entitled to borrow for a maintenance loan, although the levels vary according to whether you're means tested or not. The maximum amount for a loan for maintenance, if you are going to study in London and you are not going to live in the parental home, will be £8,009. If you go to an open day, I'll take questions at the end. If you go to an open day outside London, you'll get a different level for that, because universities outside London, students get less. There's a kind of London weighting in that. If you live at the parental home within the boundary of London, then the maximum loan you can borrow is £4,565. So this is basically, there's a complexity to the borrowing and grant from the government, because they do put the grant and loan alongside each other, so you end up with a maximum amount. So you can't get a maximum grant and a maximum loan, actually. So these things, you need an algorithm in your head, really, to work out what's there. But we do publish what we know. And this booklet, if you haven't picked it up, I've got plenty here, will give you this sort of detail. And you will find it when you come to the start of the application process for 2015, there will be plenty of information on student finance about this. But at the moment, we're just working on published government documents. So those are the household income levels and what's available, and the combination of loan and grant. And you'll see that the maximum amount is £9,647. There is an assumption that we make and the government makes that, broadly speaking, undergraduates who will be present for 9 months of the year will require to live in London £1,000 a month. You can obviously spend a lot more than £1,000 a month if you have it and want to, but students do live on this in London, and this is the amount that is available from government support. So just a bit about repayment, because obviously in terms of loans, it's a big commitment that you're taking out if you're borrowing for fees and maintenance. But it's not the sort of commitment you're making when you borrow to buy a car or for HP or on a mortgage, because the repayment process is dealt with really through the tax system. So the amount you repay does not depend on the amount you've borrowed. It depends on how much you're earning. And the collection of the loan is done through the PAYE system if you are working for an employer, or through the self-assessment system if you are self-employed. So under the new system, because the previous one, when students borrowed smaller loans, the income level is 15,000. So students currently, recent graduates, have to earn 15,000 before they start paying a loan back. For the graduates who are borrowing on this scheme, i.e. paying £9,000 a year fees, the income level at which you start to repay is 21,000. So there's an example there of income of 25,000. You pay 9% of your income between the 21 level and whatever you're earning. So at 25,000, that comes out at £30 a month. So you can tell it's going to take quite a long time to pay off the loan. And there is a website that Martin Lewis, who is one of our alum, has and who's very well known for moneysavingexpert.com, their website has a section on student finance, and they have quite an interesting little calculator thing you can play with a sort of sliding thing where you can put in how much you think you're going to borrow, depending on whether you're going to go to London or outside, and you're going to borrow for fees and maintenance, and then how much you think you might earn, depending on whether you're going to be in the financial markets as a trader or if you're going to be a nurse. And then you slide up and down and you see at what point would you pay off the loan and how much would you have paid off in capital and interest. And it's very variable. The cut-off point, which is the good news at the moment, because the government is talking about changing the system, but the published guidance at the moment is that the loan will be written off after 30 years. I think it would be very difficult for them to stop that for people that who've already borrowed on that basis, and I don't think they'll make major changes immediately, but you will have seen in the press recently that they're starting to realise that they're not getting back the money from recent graduates because they're not earning enough money to pay very much per month. So the money that they assumed would come in to fund all the next lot of loans is not coming in. So we wait with interest to see how they're going to get themselves out of that one. But in the meantime, with this scheme, the loan is written off after 30 years. So if you've never earned very much, you won't pay off the capital. You certainly won't pay off any of the interest, and your loan will be written off at the end of 30 years. If you're a market trader, you might have, and financial markets, not on the street corner, though who knows, maybe that as well, then you might pay off in 4 years. Because, when I first went to a student loan conference, I heard of them, they had someone who went into the finance house and earned such a big bonus, which was taxed, that his loan was paid off in a month. And the student loan company had no system for dealing with that. You know, it was within the first year of graduating, and it was completely crazy. So it's very variable, but the main thing is it's on what you earn. So you can owe all that money. It doesn't go on your credit files. It doesn't stop you getting a mortgage. It doesn't stop you doing other borrowing. What it does do is it reduces your monthly income by the 9% above 21,000. So it's like another tax. So I'm now going to talk about what is available from LSE. So the process for doing the government funding is all through this one assessment that you go onto the student finance, onto the GovUK website and do the student finance process. Also from that process, we have bursaries which are available on the basis of household income, and they sit alongside the grants. And so consequently, they are assessed in the same way by student finance. So student finance, we have a portal that we can look at that will not show us what you've put by way of information, but it'll show us the output. So it will show us this person's coming to LSE, the household income is 25,000, and then the student finance will say, we therefore assess this person for a bursary. And we have to say whether or not we agree. Well, we do. We just check the basic fact about whether the student is coming, has got their offer, and eventually whether they have come, and then we approve the bursary and the bursary is paid. So that's one process. There is a second process if you want to apply for scholarships from the school, which is done by a separate form, which is on our website. And I'll just go through in a minute what scholarships we anticipate we'll have available. And for overseas students who can't go through that student finance system, we also have, using the same form, we have school funds which we make available for scholarships at different levels. So the LSE bursary, which is for UK and EU students, as I mentioned, it goes through the SLC system for the UK students. For EU students, you do have to apply separately because you're not means tested through the SLC system. The bursary is then assessed and approved and is paid into the student's bank account at the start of term. So it roughly comes about a week after the grant because it's related to the process. But the difference with the bursary is student loan company have to take the money from our account before they pay it to the student's account. The eligibility for a bursary is assessed annually, as is the grant and loan. So each year through study, the student has to fill in another form for the coming year. And the bursary, like the grant, does not have to be repaid. And the level of bursaries, the maximum is £4,000 and the minimum is £750. And it's graded alongside the grant gradations, really. So that is the sort of basic level of support that's given to UK and EU students on the basis of household income. In addition, we have scholarships which are given to us by donors. Mainly they will be alumni of the school. Often they've done their undergraduate degree here some years ago and they want to give back so that other students can do a degree. They also, or they might be corporate sponsors. So the Bottrell Scholarship is given to us by an individual, Bill Bottrell, who is an alum of the school and has been supporting undergraduates for some years. He's currently set up a fund to make 6 awards available for any Home UK applicant for each of 3 years, 2014, 2015 and 2016, plus renewals. So each of these it's per year figure and you get a renewal in the following years. The PwC Lord Benson, PwC is PricewaterhouseCoopers, so that's an award they've made in the name of Lord Benson, and there they are looking for someone who's based in London. Each year we have a reasonable number of scholarships and they do vary from year to year, and so for 2015 we haven't got them all committed yet, so we do suggest you look at the website. So these are ones I know are coming in for 2015. We have a pot called New Futures Fund, which is funded by the annual fund, so that's donors who are not particularly bothered to have a scholarship named after them. They just want to contribute to scholarships. They put money into the annual fund and then we can use the pot to give variable level awards. So usually we get about 15 awards for UK and EU students out of that. Goldman Sachs have just given an award, Simon Morris Scholarship, 4 of those a year at £15,000 a year. So you can see they're variable. Some of the donors are looking to support the fee, because if you've got a grant and a bursary and you've got £9,000 here, you might choose not to borrow for the fee, or you could borrow half the fee and have a bit of extra cash if you want to live in better accommodation than the minimum. So it's up to you what you do with it. They just want to try and reduce the loan level. Someone like with the Goldman Sachs award, obviously, is likely that with the bursary and grant as well, or partial bursary, partial grant, because they're not, although they're done by need, they're not strictly done by household income in the same way that the bursaries are, because we would look at the wider circumstances. So someone might have a higher income but more obligations as a family, like caring responsibilities or extended family living with them. So, you know, we look slightly more broadly for scholarship, plus we look at what the donor is interested in, which in most cases is fairly open, but something like the PwC award, we're looking at London postcodes. And we do have a few awards for overseas undergraduates. So I mentioned there the LSE Mauritius Scholarship, which supports a fee scholarship for students from Mauritius. So for the rest of the world, we do have basically our own scheme, undergraduate support scheme. Everybody's eligible to apply, and the awards can vary between £3,000 to top up what parents are able to give, through to £24,000 for those from countries where even if a parent earns a good income, it's not going to meet the level of fees and accommodation to come to London. And so for that and for our own scheme, you download the same form from our website. The deadline for overseas students is slightly earlier than for Home UK, because they have to know what they've got in place before applying for a visa. And then just to run through, there's a couple of bits of extra funding. The top one is LSE-based. It's Student Support Fund, which is available for all students, undergraduate and postgraduate, on the basis of anybody who has unexpected financial hardship. So you could be halfway through your degree and parents could change jobs or lose a job and have different income level, and that's not expected. So basically the student can apply to us and we can give extra fund to support anything they've got by way of bursary or grant or no bursary or no grant. So that's a very useful fund. We also have emergency funds for very unexpected stuff where even if people aren't particularly needy, they've got to do something quickly and they haven't got cash flow. So we have a certain amount of flexibility to support students once they're here. And then the government has additional support for students who have dependents or children, students with a disability. There are various allowances to assist students to get to the school and to study. Assessments are done within the school, and it covers a range of different disabilities. So the Gov website has got information about those allowances, which are set amounts for UK students. The Disability Office also has some funding for overseas students because they're not eligible for these awards, to ensure, again, that they can have access and have the support they need to study. So a little bit about living costs, which is an area that, obviously, London is expensive, and I mentioned, you know, people can spend a lot of money a month. We certainly estimate a minimum of 1,000. Having said that, we know we have students who live on even less than 1,000. I would also say that a lot of our undergraduate students have a part-time job. A lot of them have a part-time job on campus, and there's quite a good system for finding jobs on campus. So the helpers who showed you around today, they'll be students. We have a lot of public lectures, so students will be involved in being stewards for those events. And then they work. Some of the offices have work for them, and there are cafes, and student union have bars and cafes on site. So there is work for students, and it's actually above, certainly above the minimum wage, and it's dealt with through our careers service here. So as well as looking at long-term careers for people, they will help them find short-term jobs while they're here. So that's another area of income that can be used to supplement and give some choice about what living costs you have available. I'm going to talk about accommodation now, which is it's not an office that I'm part of, but obviously we know well the actual accommodation and how the student's experience goes in the accommodation. It's a very, very important part of student life when you're coming for the first year. And so an LSE has a wide range of accommodation. There are two halls owned by LSE which are for undergraduates only, and there are five other halls that are owned by LSE which are mixed undergraduate and postgraduate. There are five University of London intercollegiate halls, and they are also in the central part of London, and there you would be living alongside undergraduates from some of the other universities around here, King's or University College or SOAS. So you would have other LSE students there as well, but it's a mixed hall. There are some of the halls are self-catered and some of them are catered. Some of them have single rooms only. Most of them have the opportunity to have shared rooms. All first-year students are guaranteed a place in one of the halls. And we do like first-years to come into hall because it's a very good way to meet people, especially people outside your department and course. You know, you start to make friends across the school. But there are student societies as well and sports societies and so on. But hall is a good place to sort of get your feet when you're first here. As you would expect, all halls have direct computer access and Wi-Fi. They have bars, computer rooms, laundries. The prices there, Those are, I think those are weekly prices. Someone asked me at the end of the last session, because the accommodation office offered these to me, and actually when I look on the website at the accommodation available, there are cheaper rooms than this. So I think they're looking at sort of giving an average here, but I do advise just looking at the individual halls on the website, and I'll put the website up at the end when I've finished, so you can have a look at it. Basically, you have a view of whether it's catered or not, how many people are in it, what sort of rooms they are, and what the cost is. The University of London Hall's prices again there. And a little idea of where they are. They are all an easy bus ride away or a reasonable walk. Bankside, which is the one lower right-hand side behind Tate Modern, that's about 40 minutes walk, so that gives you the sort of scale. A very nice walk, actually, providing it's not freezing wind, along the river and across to the campus, which is the red spot in the middle. Obviously, the halls nearest to the campus, particularly Grosvenor House, is expensive because, in effect, you're living in Covent Garden. But High Holborn, Passfield, further out, Carl Saunders, I think I'm right in saying, yes, Carl Saunders and Passfield, which are both up towards Euston, top left-hand corner, they are the ones that are undergraduate only. And all this, that sort of, the purple buildings are University of London buildings. It's very much this part of town has got a lot of university presence. So nice area of town to be in. You can obviously opt to live in the private sector, and certainly in second and third year a lot of undergraduates move out into the private sector. Our accommodation office have lists of properties and they will help you to find somewhere. In fact, we have a lot of landlords who are used to having LSE students, so the same flats change hands year on year between different groups of students. So it's not as difficult to find somewhere to live as it would be if you were moving into London without the links of the university, and I think most people do find they can move out to somewhere they've visited, they've seen, been to visit friends there, and they try and just take over the flat. So to apply to the hall, you basically use an online system called Hallpad, and you can put choices of up to 3 LSE halls and up to 3 University of London halls. And you put them in order of preference. Your first choice isn't guaranteed, but obviously the university prefers people to be happy with their where they're coming to. So where they can, they will accommodate first choice, second choice. But it depends on the mix each year. The deadline for applying for hall is the 30th of June. And as I mentioned, all first years are guaranteed a place in hall. And there is always some swapping round to be done in the first couple of weeks if people arrive and they really don't like where they are. There's normally a bit of horse trading between rooms goes on. So we usually find there's even a couple of rooms left by the middle of term. So we've never had a problem of finding someone a place in hall. And usually, hopefully, they're all happy with the place they end up. And I'll show you that website in a minute, as I mentioned. I'm just going to talk briefly first about what is present by way of support for students. Obviously, it's a big step coming to university, and there's a lot to get to grips with in the first terms. So within the academic department, every student has an academic advisor, and that's the first person they would talk to if they were had got questions or issues over deadlines or topics or course choices or whatever. There's also a departmental tutor within each department who looks after all the undergraduates. So if you feel the advisor's not able to help, or the advisor themselves might say, well, it might be good to talk to the tutor who's got a broader view of the whole department's programmes. And then there's a Dean of Undergraduate Studies whose job is to look after all the undergraduates, who will deal with all areas of all issues, and is basically able to troubleshoot even the worst of problems. Also, you would get a student mentor, and through the Student Services Centre, There is a referral, which is my colleagues and I, we're all based in the Student Services Centre, so we have a drop-in every day where we can give advice on financial support. The visa office have a drop-in, they can talk about visas. There is a general, if you need a document reprinted, like registration certificate to show to the bank or whatever, you just come there and that's available. So that's open all day, every day. The student union have specialist staff they employ, and they have an elected officer. And so if students don't want to come to us because they see us as part of LSE staff and they're nervous about talking to staff about their problems, there's plenty of student help as well through the students' union. And then there's the counselling service, which has very helpful workshops on things like managing your workload, on managing stress, particularly at this time of year when we're about to go into the exam season, and they'll also do individual appointments. And then finally, within the residences, every residence has a warden and sub-wardens. The warden is a member of staff, the sub-wardens are quite often PhD students, and there's someone present on site all the time, and they will deal with anything that's going on in the hall. There's also peer-to-peer support within the residences, so students can be linked with students who've been around longer and they can show them the ropes. So there's plenty of support around. There is the list of useful addresses. This presentation will be on the student recruitment website, so you can look at it again. I think you'll be sent a link after today if you want to go in and find these websites. And then, as I mentioned, I'm just going to... this is the accommodation website, and if you look at residential halls at a glance, and then there's some mixed halls there, the two undergraduate halls are there, you see it's got price range there, which is actually lower than the range they gave me as an average. So I think they're looking at sort of undergraduate and postgraduate together when they're giving that sort of average. So then you can go into that hall and have a look at where it is, what it looks like, and do frequently asked questions and so on. So I recommend that because it gives you a feel for the halls, and I recommend, if you can today, visiting one of them. Or even, I think there's an advert at the front of the book, and I've got a friend who did this when her daughter came to university. She didn't come to LSE, but they did come and have a weekend in London, and they used LSE accommodation, which is available through vacations. Then you can have a really good look at what the hall is like before you let anyone move into it. So I'll take a couple of questions now, and then if we stop after that, and anyone who wants to ask anything specific, I'll stay around a bit to answer specific questions as well. Is there anything general that anyone wants to ask me as I've gone at quite a pace? Yes. No, it's not interest-free, no. Sadly not, no. The interest rate is slightly complex. While you're studying, it's RPI, I think, Retail Price Index, plus 3%. When you stop studying, it's just RPI. And then when you start earning over the 21,000, it goes back up to RPI plus so many percent, and it actually varies according to what you're earning. So that's where I recommend the Martin Lewis, the moneysavingexpert.com website, because that's got more detail about how the interest rates vary according to what stage you're at. I'm afraid not. Her Majesty's government is not that generous, sadly. So, no, it's not. It never has been under the old system either. It's just obviously we're talking bigger money with the increased fees. Yes? It is. I'm not sure. Basically, at the start, they said they wouldn't let people pay off, and then they realised that was foolish, and they've said you can pay off early with no penalty. And I believe you can pay chunks as well as paying the whole thing off. So, I mean, I do think that's something to consider in terms of you know, the options that students are facing, like how quickly they'll get a job, whether they'll need money to for a deposit for a flat, you know, if they start to earn money, you know, start to move on and be earning. You could do the borrowing at the start and then see what happens after graduation and then make the decision about whether to repay. So there is that flexibility. And I think given, as they're saying, 46% of people aren't going to repay, they'll be more keen to have people pay back than they were initially. Yes. I don't know whether they're less likely to get their first choice. They don't hear as quickly as everyone else, so which indicates that they do want to get everyone else settled. But they're certainly still guaranteed a place and encouraged, actually, to move into Hull, even if they've got a home within easy commuting distance. If you live in the European Union, you can borrow for your fees, and then you would be eligible for a bursary depending on household income, and there are some scholarships which are available for EU students. So I think you just apply for everything, basically. Yes. Should what be conditional?
The offer.
Oh, yeah, the offer. Yes, you can apply for everything while your offer is conditional. And you'll be told what you'll get, and then as soon as you pass your exams and it's made firm, then everything's in place. So you don't have to wait till your offer's unconditional. Yes?
On the topic of financial support, you mentioned that the government
The government take account of, in this booklet, there's a little explanation of household residual income. So the government are looking at your gross income on your tax return, but they do take an amount off per dependent child, and they also take off your pension contributions, but that's all. So they won't take off any commitments you've got, you know, that you are struggling with. Other debts or whatever, they're not interested in that. It's just statutory number of children and pension. For LSE scholarships, we're not quite so rigid. We look at what you're actually spending and why, if you want to tell us. So if, basically, as I mentioned, if somebody has got dependents in the household, not just children, but elderly parents or whatever, you know, you might get a household that is relatively well off, but actually the obligations of the household are much greater than the neighbour, you know, so we can look at that variation for scholarships, because our scholarships are also done on need, because everybody coming to LSE has got such high grades, it's very difficult to award things on merit. We'd rather get people through the door on need, and then people get prizes for merit as they go through their degree. Yes. Yes. I'm not sure that it is, actually. I think it might be the same, whereas the other loan is different. I think the living with parents one is similar. I'll just take one more. Did someone else? Yes. Sorry. The first year is guaranteed, but second and third year students do live in Hall in some cases, so they apply. They just don't get the priority early on in the same way that the first years do. Okay, well, I'll still be around if anyone else wants to ask anything. If you haven't picked up one of these elsewhere, there are some at the front here.